tell us that matter matters.
Okay, can everybody hear me well?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, Marcel here.
Okay, so thank you everybody. Thank you the organizers for inviting me to this seminar. I will talk to you today about this recent paper by me and my two collaborators, Roberto Vercacci and Alfred Lincoln. So today I will tell you why we think that matter matters in a simple way, something like this. You can use the slide number two. So this is a brief outline of my talk. So first I will very just in one slide I will talk to you about the motivation that we that move us to do this work. Then since I see that this is not very familiar with asymptotic safety, I will do a brief introduction to the asymptotic safety framework. Then I will present the main results of our work. And I will conclude with some remarks and summary of the results of the so you can move to slide number three. So I think that a quantum theory of gravity, that is a viable description of the microscopic dynamics of our universe, must include that dynamical matter theories of freedom. In the quantum gravity approaches that are on the market, usually matter is ignored or is included in a non-dynamical way, or say the treatment of matter is not sufficient. This is an important features that we want to include in quantum gravity theory, because we know that the addition of matter degrees of freedom could alter the properties of a theory. For example, we can look at the Youngian theory, where we all know that the ultraviolet condition of the Youngian theory is provided by asymptotic freedom. But adding too many fermion degrees of freedom to the Youngian theory just spoils or destroys completely the asymptotic freedom property. And we think that similar factors could also occur in gravity. And in particular, in our framework, so in the asymptotic safety scenario, this is the case, as I will show you in the following talk. In particular, in the asymptotic safety framework, it's quite straightforward to include matter degrees of freedom. Since the asymptotic safety machinery is based on quantum field theory formulation of gravity, it's quite easy just to take the usual quantum field theory and well-known quantum field theory for matter degrees of freedom. In particular, there are also works that show that the quantum gravity fluctuation can generate interactions between matter. We can also use this the asymptotic safety framework to study the compatibility of gravity with various particle physics models. In particular, this is a theme I will discuss later, but you can ask for the existence of ultraviolet fixed point for the gravitational spectrum. So we take the system fixed point as a requirement, and we can ask if the particle physics model is coupled to gravity still preserve the fixed point, so it is compatible with the requirement of an asymptotic safety gravity. And also we can take it as a test for the asymptotic safety quantum gravity, because let's say that the matter content of the subtle model is not compatible with an asymptotic safety quantum gravity. This would, let's say, not default in favor of the asymptotic safety framework, because if even at the lowest possible approximation, we are not able to couple the matter fields we observe and the fields that are present in our universe, so the standard model ones, for sure, trying to resolve all the approximations we will use will not help in this direction. So if we move to slide number 4, I will hear into the top introduction of synthetic safety. So we all know that perturbative quantum gravity is not normalizable, in particular at one loop level when coupled with matter. This is the well-known result of Stokes and Delton in study 4. And at two loop level with just good gravity. This is the George Sagnassi well-known work of 1986. But Weinberg in 76 proposed, well, maybe we can try to save the perturbative quantum gravity by letting exist a non-trivial fixed point for the normalization group flow of gravity. In this way, we can try to define in another way the normalizability of the field. So if we move to slide number 5, I will explain you what I mean for fixed points. So after an action is chosen to describe our particular theory, that can be gravity, but can also be some other quantum field theory, because all this procedure applies for a general quantum field theory. So after an action is chosen, is the desired field content and symmetry. We can relate physics at different scales with the normalization group flow. In particular, if the action is parametrized by a set of couplings, so you just choose the action with a sum of operators, and each operator is weighted by the coupling. The normalization group flow is equivalent to compute all the beta function of the coupling. In particular, so a fixed point in the normalization group flow is a point in the theory space, so in the space of all the couplings, where all these couplings just stop running, so all the beta function bunches. We can extend the usual definition of the fixed points of beta functions in general to dimension full couplings. In particular, this definition is extended in a very natural way. We just define the dimensionless coupling is a right power of the scale we are considering. So these 6 points have some properties. In particular, they require that along the RG flow, all the quantities are well defined. There are no divergences. And another very important requirement is that the ultraviolet critical surface has to be finite dimensional. So this means that the surface that is attracted to this non-Gaussian fixed point, to the non-trivial fixed point, has to be finite dimensional. This is a requirement. So this is something we have to check a posteriori when we do all the analysis of our theory. So in principle, it's not something you can, so it's something we are assuming. Okay. So if the critical surface is finite dimensional, this means that our theory is still predictive. So just a finite number of measurements is required to record the theory at all stages. Then in the case of gravity, we also have the requirement that we know the infinite limit we want for our theory is GR. So for the RG flow, we require that the RG trajectories that flow into the 6 point have an interval where GR is a good approximation. So we can move to slide number 6. So I explained what I mean for 6 points. This was the basic idea of Weinberg. But until the 90s, not many detailed computations were done because the calculability of the theory was quite poor. Thanks to the work of Reiter and Dasterich in 94, they proposed to compute the RG flow, the effective average action techniques. So if you move to slide number 7, I will just tell you very, very briefly what is the functional emulation risk technique or approach. So the main ingredient is the effective average action, what I will call gamma k. This is basically the effective action we all know from the quantum field theory, but modified. In particular, it's modified by the addition of a regulator or cutoff, which we call RK, that you add to the wave action, and then you derive using the standard procedure the effective action. And what you get in the end, you will call it effective average action after you subtracted back the regulator. This regulator just implements some sort of coarse grain or cutoff. It acts as a suppression factor for the low moment of fluctuation. So it works like an infrared cutoff. The power of this of the functional normalization loop approach is that the effective average action satisfies this equation that is called the Dasterich equation. So here in this equation you can see the super trace is based on all the degrees of freedom by very dt, I mean the derivative with respect to the scale. Okay, so I will call k is the scale, and dt is k times the derivative with respect to k. Rk is the cutoff term I introduced earlier, and gamma 2 is for that part of the action. So this equation is general and is exacted, but usually you cannot just solve this directly. You have to use some approximation. One of the approximations is just to truncate the vector action to some combination of operators, and then you just project everything on this combination of operators. We just discussed everything else. So if we move to slide number 8, we basically conclude my introduction to asymptotic safety by saying that there are more than 2 decades of work on trying to find evidences on the existence of elongation of these spines using different transitions of the effective angle rejection. In particular, we are still missing a complete proof of the existence of these elongation of these spines in general. But within different transitions, we found these spines and we studied it. So if you move to slide number 9, I will just briefly recap what kind of truncation are studied, has been studied. So there are a lot of work on the Anthony-Hilbert truncation. This is just a combination of the spans proportional to the curvature and the constant, so the cosmological constant in particular. Then there are works on the R squared, C squared transition, so when you include also times that are proportional to the square of the bystander. Then more recently, there are works on the F of R transition to just keep terms proportional to the nth power of the curvature. There are works that goes to the power n equal to 34. So this truncation is studied up to a very large number, a very large power of the curvature. There are also works that studied a first order formulation with a nose term and also running the parameters. There are works using Lorentzian signatures, works that also include masses, and works that try to resolve the approximation between background and fluctuation, since this kind of computation are done in the background field meter. There is separation between background and fluctuation. And also there are, finally, there are works that treat the running of the Gauss action. So we can move to the next slide, where I will start talking about my work. So in this slide, you can see what are the results for our truncation. In particular, we will use an Anthony-Hilbert truncation for the gravitational factor with the usual H15. And by usual, I mean the one parameter H15, where we fix the gauge to be the lambda one. And the product of off-gross action. For the massless, we will consider massless, slim, and coupled massless. The scale, I have nothing to say. For the thermals, we will use a better formulation for the educational part. So everybody knows that when couple turns to gravity, we have to use a better formulation. But by using a symmetric gauge fixing of the petrol fluctuation, we can re-express everything in terms of the metric fluctuation. And then we will also not consider the O4 loss. So I forgot to say here all the work is in the Euclidean signature, so this is why we have O4 and not 013. So we will completely ignore the O4 loss. That with this gauge fixing are not dynamical. So they don't have a symmetric term. For the gauge field, we will consider abelian field. Here things are ABC, okay, this is the title. And we will also not consider any mixing between gauge and diplomacy dots. In a recent work of my collaborators, Percacci and then Codailo, Pagani, and Giverito, it has been shown that in order to have a consistent closure of the beta function for the in the pure gravity case, also the graviton and the gravitational dot the anomalous dimension are needed. So in this case, we will also compute the matter anomalous dimension, and we will use them to close the beta function. So you can move to slide number 11. Then I will go a little bit into the details of the computation, but not so much. So I will avoid to put any very long and boring formula. So as I said before, all the functions, we will use the functional normalization technique. So we will use the ground two method to compute the effective action. So when we use the program parameter, the gauge invariant of the effective action is assured by imposing that by keeping the gauge invariant of the background. This splitting between the background and fluctuation lets us to distinct in a meaningful way high and low momenta of the quantum fluctuations that let us to give this cutoff I told you before. This is the core of the synthetic safety approach. And then we will keep the background dependent by letting the background to be general. Then we specify the background to do actual computation, but the result will be background independent. So the main novelty of our computation is that we computed explicitly all the anomalous dimensions. This is something that was not done before because it's quite complex and requires a lot of computation that were not very straightforward. So we extracted the wave function normalization, the Z5, that is what I call here Z5, from which we can define the anomalous dimension in the usual way, from the two-point functional. And to do this computation, we will use a flat background. Then we combine the result, this result with the the one you can find in the literature, where they use a beta function of the cosmological constant and Newton's constant. The tilde means that we are considering the a-dimensional quantity. As I said before, you need to use a-dimensional quantities to give a meaningful definition of the IQ flow and fixed point. So these computations are done with a spherical background because we need to extract a frame that is proportional to the curvature. And we will keep into account all the anomalous dimension consistent. So we can move to slide number 12. So
Hello? Could you go back a little bit? Yes, sir. To slide 11. Can you hear me?
Yeah, very, very low. So.
Okay. So when you say that there is background independence,
yes.
So could I choose a background where geometry is actually varying at the Planck scale?
In principle, yes, you can use whatever background you want, but then I don't know if you are still able to do all the computations.
Right. So in actual computations, some additional assumption must be made. I mean, for example, if you have chosen flat background, etc. So
yes.
What do you need? I mean, somehow in the actual calculation, what?
So in principle, the procedure is background independent, right? So if I compute some quantity that I know that is background independent, then I can specify a background to compute it. I should know that quantity is independent from background from some starting assumptions. So the method assures me that the quantity I computed is background independent, and then I have to specify it to do the actual computation.
Right. But in this proof that the quantities are background independent, the argument is formal, isn't it? Or is it really taken into account all the
details? No, it's formal. It's formal.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Thank you very much.
So we are on slide number 12. So before starting before I start to show you all the detailed results we got from our computation, I think that it's useful to look at the one-loop analysis of our beta function. So here, for one-loop analysis, I intend something very specific that is not maybe what you're used to from the CFT literature. So for one loop, I mean that we neglect at this point, the anomalous dimension of the all the fields, and then that we expand the beta function to the first order in the cosmological constant, and to the second order in the Newton's constant. So the two expressions we get are the two in this line. Well, Ms, I recall you, is the number of scalars, Mb is the number of Dirac fermions, and Mv the number of vector fields, the base fields. And in red here, I try to show you where the effect of graviton ends up is. So it's encoded in this red number. I think that it's useful to look at these very simple formulas, because in this approximation the problem can be studied analytically, and so we will try to analyze the effect of matter in this approximation. So you can move to slide number 13. If you look for fixed points to the Wallis beta function, we get these six points for the two couplings. The dimensionless cosmological constant is the dimensionless Newton constant. So how we can say if the fixed point is a good one or a bad one? For example, one requirement we can ask is the positivity of the Newton's constant at the fixed point, the G star. This is a requirement that in principle one can object, because you can say, okay, the cosmological constant, the Newton's constant, you will be fixing it as in the infrared, and then you can flow whatever you want, this one. But actually, we know that the Newton's constant is positive in the infrared, because the one we experience from GI. And no transitions are known that change the sign of the Newton's constant during the flow. So we thought that requiring this to be positive also in the ultraviolet will be a good requirement. So requiring this star to be positive is the same to require that this combination of the number of things is negative. In particular, you can see that the fixed point has divergences. So we have two in the parameter space, which is three dimensional. We have two parallel planes of divergences that are defined by the denominator equal to zero of the two of these two couplings at the fixed point. So we will cut the part of the parameter space we are interested. Obviously, number of fields the number of fields are all positive, so we have only 1/8 of the whole R3 parameter space. So this corner is of the parameter space is cut by two parallel things. We will consider just the region of fixed points that is connected with one of no matter, so the pure gravity fixed point that we believe is the one that is realized. In particular, we have the critical exponents of these fixed points are both positive in the allowed region, so in this region connected with the pure gravity fixed point. So if you move to slide number 14, you can see a plot of this allowed region. So in dark blue, you can see the allowed region with no vector field. And then the one a little bit bigger is the one with 6, then 12, and then 24 with 6. Here we just pick some number to have an idea of what's going on. So adding which field, we just enlarge the region in the number of scalar, number of Dirac fields of the parameter space. And then I forgot to say something a little more important. If you go back to slide number 13, I'm sorry, you can see how the number of pillars and the number of DSPs are bounded. So adding an arbitrary amount of pillars to DSPs transform to force inequality. But adding an arbitrary number of vector fields is compatible with the inequality. So this is why on the plot of slide number 14, we are plotting the number of scalar number of DSPs. Because then you can add an arbitrary number of gauge fields and still retain a fixed point, but just changing the shape of the distribution. So if we move to slide number 15, now we'll just show you the results for the full system, so not just in the one-loop approximation. Also in the full system, we need some selection criteria for the fixed points, because in general, when you look for fixed points, we have some solutions of the beta function interpretive system that are not physical fixed points, that are just artifacts of the transitions or that we are using. So we need some criteria to identify the good fixed points from the bad fixed points. So in particular, our selection criteria is just the one we will pick every time. We will pick just the fixed point that is a continuous deformation of the field gravity fixed point. And to do that is in some way equivalent of requiring the Newton's constant of the fixed point to be positive for the same reason as I told you in the one loop analysis. Then we will also discard all the fixed points with less than two relevant directions. And we rule out all the fixed points with two large critical exponents. We will choose this value to be 20, that is just an artifact number. So changing this number will just change very, very slightly the boundary of the allowed region, that is still a little bit delicate because of all the approximation we use. So to these selection criteria, we will also add another criteria that is something new, we are supposing. So we want to exploit the connection between the predictivity of the theory and the anomalous dimension of the field, in particular of the graviton in our case, to say if a fixed point is good or bad. In particular, for an operator that is as I show here in the slide, composed by a coupling constant and some power of some field phi, the critical exponent and the fixed point is proportional to this combination of b, that is the dimensionality of the space-time. Here, all the analysis can be done in an arbitrary dimensional, the dimension for the space-time, but all the results I will show you just for the case where u is equal to 4. Then you have a term that is proportional to the canonical dimensionality of the film, d phi, and a term that is proportional to the anomalous dimension of the field, eta phi. So by requiring that only a finite number of these operators are shifted to relevance at the fixed point, is equivalent to just ask that the anomalous dimension of the field phi is greater than minus 2 times the canonical dimensionality of the field. In the case of a graviton, this is equivalent to ask that eta h is greater than minus 1 in the minus 3 in the case of 4 dimensions. So we'll stress that this is an additional requirement. This is not something that was ever done before. And I will show the results with and particular attention to the distinction between the standard selection criteria and this new criteria we are adding here. So if you move to slide number 16, I will just recap here what are the effects of adding master fields to the fixed point. In particular, adding scalar fields move the fixed point, move to smaller value of the Newton's constant and larger positive value of the cosmological constant. And it is still true, as in the one loop case, that there is a critical number of scalar fields that you can couple to gravity and see the existence of the gravitational system. And also, it's interesting to note that adding too many scalar fields can lead to a strong increase of the critical exponent of the system. Adding fermion fields will shift the cosmological constant of the fixed points to larger negative values, so it has an outside effect of the scalar. And it will move the Newton constant of the fixed points to larger values. And also for the fermions, as in the one loop case, it is true that there is a critical number of fermions. But for the fermions, the effect on the critical exponent is small. For the vector fields, adding vector fields that has the effect to move the Newton constant at the fixed point to smaller values and the cosmological constant to larger positive values. And also here, as in the one loop case, there are no maximal number of vector fields, but predictivity might not be preserved. And with this statement, I mean that the anomalous dimension of the graviton grows, becomes more negative adding vector fields, so you just do not satisfy anymore the additional constraints you will be proposed in terms of the anomalous dimension of the graviton. So if you go to slide number 17, I will show you the allowed reason in the number of scalars, number of fermion parameter space is zero gauge field. So we stick to the number of the vector fields is zero. The red dots are the points that are compatible with the existence of the gravitational system. The analysis is done in the numerical analysis, so the results are discrete. Is not an analytical result, it's a numerical result. The Bluetooth and the speed point that are compatible also with the additional constraint we want to impose to the anomalous dimension of the graviton. And the black line is the result for the one loop phase. So as you can see, the region is grown a lot, it's more than double in the volume. But the qualitative behavior is actually the same, so you still have a maximum number of scalars and permutations you can couple to lighting still within the systems of the 6 points. So if you move to slide number 18, you will see the same picture, but in this case with quite gauge field. So the shape of the boundary changed a little bit. We experienced that this change of the shape of the boundary is visible only in the case you move from zero to just one gauge field, and then adding gauge field has the same aspect as in the one loop case. So the region grows, but the shape of the boundary, the shape of the boundaries are all similar. Then I have to say another important thing. As I was trying to say it before, maybe I was not very clear. You don't have to believe too much to the result of the boundaries of this region, because they are subject to a lot of approximations and to a lot of numerical uncertainty. So just not take too seriously the point at the boundary. Also, what happens at the boundaries of the region? It happens basically the same thing was happening at the one loop case. So all the quantities that diverge. This also puts another constraint on how much we can deliver at this data at the boundary.
Can I ask a question to Pietro? Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Eugenio. Can you indicate in this diagram where is the standard model, and can you explain again what are the speed force and the red dot? Why the text of speed force?
Okay, so the standard model is in the upper left part of this diagram. So this is actually why we choose to show. I choose to show you the plot with the 12 gauge fields, because 12 gauge fields is actually the number of gauge fields for the standard model. So the standard model has 24 approximately directions. They are 45 halves directions. And has 4 scalar fields. So you can just look at the upper left part of the diagram. The dots are the points that are compatible with the system that are gravitational system, just by requiring this to be a continuous transformation to the other 6 points without matter. And the blue circles are the 6 points that have a bound on the anomalous dimension of the gliton. That we believe can be an additional constraint to keep the predictivity of the theory. But if we move over to slide number 19, we will show specific analysis of Mappel models. So before going into the details of the numbers, I want to give you a disclaimer. So all these results are within a particular truncation for matrices and gravitational types. We are neglecting all the master type interactions. So for example, for the standard model, we are not putting into the computation all the standard model Lagrangian. You are only putting the standard model master content. And all the gauge fields are Abelian. So for example, there are not the SU3 gauge fields in the standard model community. They are all U1. So you can just look at the table and see how the standard models and all these extensions that are physically motivated. So just the standard model plus that master scalars plus all the neutrinos, the action are still compatible with the existence of a fixed point, of a gravitational fixed point. But you have to pay attention that maybe the truncation we are using is not enough to capture all the degrees of freedom we want, because the anomalous dimension for the graviton becomes very, very negative. Then I will finish this slide, and then I will add an extra remark on this, because there has been a lot of improvement in the last month. So, and I want to add that the maximally symmetric standard model extension, the other SU5 gap or SOM gap, are not compatible with the existence of the gravitational fixed point. So what I want to add to this slide is that the computation was done using two different things for the gravitational factor and the matter factor, because the gravitational factor was done by some of my collaborators in work that has appeared in the archive in April by Codello, Ludovico, and Pagani. But and we now in a work by me and Roberto Percacci of last year, we showed that in the case of masterpiece, in particular in the case of fermions, you cannot use that kind of scheme, which is just wrong, and we have to use another one that is called time to cut off, just for reference. So we use the correct one for the matter, but we use the result of these other guys for the gravitational part that use a different scheme. Now we are almost ready to publish, to put on the archive an updated version of the paper where I just redone all the computation in the same scheme. And the normal dimension of the graviton does not behave anymore so badly. So all these numbers just became more reasonable. So they're not anymore a problem. So if you move to slide number 20.
Hello? Can you comment on the fact that the fixed point for the cosmological constant is always negative no matter what?
Yeah, this is because in all these standard model and extensions, you have a lot of fermions respect to the number of killers. And as I showed you before, then adding fermions just has this effect on the cosmological concept of fixed points.
Would you take it as evidence against these extensions? Or the effect might be compensating, say, by taking into account the dynamics?
No.
This the interactions, I mean, that you are neglecting.
No, I don't really think so. This is, if you believe that the cosmological constant at the fixed point should be positive, but I don't think it's a requirement that is motivated physically, say. So at the fixed point, the cosmological constant can be whatever it wants, right? It's doing the infrared with the three other measurements or estimates.
Right, thank you.
But then, I mean, you can look at the flow equation, and then do you
yes.
see that, in fact, it flows to positive values at lower energies?
Yes, yes, yes.
I think that
yes, you can follow the RG trajectories in all its parts, and you can see that all these trajectories pass by the Gaussian fixed points that have all the properties you want.
Right, so they pass close to the Gaussian fixed point, but with positive cosmological constant as opposed to negative.
Yes, positive cosmological constant.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we move to slide number 20, we will see how extra dimensions are not actually required in asymptotic spaces. In fact, all the results I told you are for V equals 4, so for space time dimensions, but a priori they are compatible. So what happens to the allowed region that I showed you in the two plots before in the case of five or six space time dimensions? Actually, this region just shrinks a lot. In particular, here you have the picture for five space-time dimensions inside the H field, and you can see that this region is very, very smaller than the previous one. And the standard model, degrees of freedom, master degrees of freedom, as incompatible is the existence of a gravitational fixed point in five, six, or more dimensions. So this can be interpreted as against the presence of extra dimension if we believe that the standard model is the good model for the master degrees of freedom of our universe. So we can move over to slide number 21, which is the last result I want to show you. So in QPD, quantum fluctuations just lead to a dynamical generation of the scale, lambda QPD, at which we don't believe that the synthetic freedom will happen. In particular, something similar also happens for quantum gravity. So a quantum gravity scale will emerge dynamically. This scale is a transition scale between the infrared and the fixed point regime. It's a scale where the dimension full Newton coupling pass from constant, that is in the infrared, to a scale-free regime that is proportional to 1 over the scale squared. And it was found in previous work by Martin Reuters and collaborators in 2004 that this scale in the case of Einstein-Hilbert transition is somewhere near the Planck scale. So a meaningful question is, okay, then what happens if we have mastered to the answering the condition? Is there this field pushed in the infrared or in the infraviolet? So this can be interpreted as so if you want to explore the quantum gravity scale, you have to do an experiment. To do an experiment, you will maybe use some experiments that work from scale. But if the quantum gravity scale and the presence of matter is pushed more in the ultraviolet, maybe with the hope to explore that region is less so if the scale just shifts in the ultraviolet, there is a problem because you need more energy to reach the quantum gravity scale. In particular, what we saw is that matter fluctuation does change the scale, and white scale seems to have very little access to this scale. Fermions shift it towards larger values. And in the case of the standard model, since we have a lot of fermions, we saw that this scale is shifted by a factor of 10 towards the ultraviolet. So in principle, this is a fact against a possible experiment at the something that we see in the near future. So if you move to slide number 22, I will just conclude my talk with a brief recap of the results. So we explore the compatibility of matter degrees of freedom within the asymptotic safety scenario for gravity. In particular, we saw the effects of scalars, fermions, and the Lagrangian range fields on the existence of the interactive system. We saw that there is an upper limit on the allowed number of scalars, fermions, and that's what we freedom. We also proposed new criterion on the analysis of this fixed point that gives the normal dimension and the predictivity of the QD. And we also computed explicitly and included all the normal dimension of all the quantum fluctuations. If you move to slide number 23, we then also focused on particular models and we tried to use these particular models, the existence of a gravitational fixed point to say something about these particular matter models. In particular, the standard model seems to be compatible with the existence of an Laplacian fixed point. Also, its observation motivated extension are compatible. But other models like supersymmetric ones are not. Then also we explored the possibility of having more than four state dimensions, and what we saw is that the allowed region shrinks considerably, and there is no more compatibility with the standard model. In the end, we also analyzed the effect of matter degrees of freedom on the quantum gravity scale, and we saw that this quantum gravity scale may be farther than we expected. So I want to thank you for your attention, and that's all.
Questions?
Bishop, can you go back to page 19?
Yes.
Yeah. So all this is very, very interesting. And my question is, how can you make it stronger? For instance, you have these three disclaimers, these three assumptions. Do you have a reason to expect that this is a good approximation, for instance, for the fact that the GHP is a billion? One may argue that in the UV, because of asymptotic freedom, this is a good approximation, this is a good truncation. But how difficult it is to go beyond this declaration?
I think it's quite difficult. So this is rather big approximation phase. The first thing we can compute. We don't plan to expand it because for example, for sure, considering the gauge fields to be non-abelian would be a nightmare from the point of view of the computation. And this is quite difficult. One thing that we want to try to explore is just by putting just one scalar field with site interaction and try to mimic, for example, the Higgs Lagrangian in this way, and try to see if there are corrections to the Higgs mass due to the gravity contribution. But try to implement, for example, the whole standard model Lagrangian would be very, very difficult. It's just a computational difficulty. It's not a conceptual one.
I also have several questions in slide 19. So maybe we should just continue with what Eugenio was asking. First of all, as far as I know, quite some time ago, Bergacci and Perini and various people had looked at the coupling of self-interacting scalar fields, and they did find that you get the a fixed point, provided the coupling is, it's just lambda pi to the fourth, right?
Yes.
So first, I want to verify that. Am I right?
Yes, we want to verify that, but maybe I don't stress it too much because I thought that it was a little bit too technical to be interesting. But what we are doing here is something completely different from the conceptual point of view, from what was done in the literature. In particular, we are including all the anomalous dimensions of all the fields, and this changed a lot the some features of the theory. For example, just look at the no matter line, so just pure gravity. Also, in this case, we are including the graviton and gravitational drops anomalous dimension. And if you are familiar with the usual picture people in asymptotic safety just show at the conferences or in the papers, you will see that the RG flow makes a spiral into the fixed point. This means that, for example, the critical exponents are imaginary, okay? But if you include the anomalous dimension, all the critical exponents become real. And this is the first time we see something, we see real critical exponents in this framework. So this is something new. And also, if you look at the cosmological constant for pure gravity, this is negative, okay? A little bit negative, not very much, but it's negative. And also this is a new thing for the asymptotic safety community.
Right. So I completely go ahead.
we want to do the same thing of the Takashi Perini paper, okay? But a priori all the results can be different.
Oh, so that was my question. So you say that even the result would say that the fixed point does persist for lambda 5 to the 4th, but not for others. It's like that might even be different, or that might not survive.
Exactly.
Is that what you say?
Okay. Exactly.
Thank you. The second thing was that Eugenio just sort of very nicely sort of proposed that maybe it might be a nightmare to consider non-abelian gauge fields. But perhaps there is some argument one can make, which is just basically not a heroic calculation of the kind that you have already done, but some semi-quantitative argument, which would say that because of asymptotic safety, because of asymptotic freedom in ordinary gauge theories, this assumption that the gauge fields are abelian is not that bad. Some calculation sort of just not full-blown one, but just around the fixed point or something, which says that we'll assume there is asymptotic freedom or estimate the corrections and show that they are small or something like that. Is that something that is feasible?
Yes, I think so, but you have to pay attention to I wouldn't bet that things are still the same, because putting non-abelian fields will change completely, for example, the normal dimension for the gauge field. So it will have no effect to the computation of the beta function, for example, or the anomalous dimension for the graviton, that will change completely the computation for the anomalous dimension of the abelian field. That a priori is a next leading order correction. So, yeah, in some sense you can just say that considering them abelian are a good approximation, but it's still just an approximation.
So the last question is really the point that you already explained, but many of us did not completely grasp it. And this was a new criterion that you have just introduced, right? With respect to the anomalous dimension, with respect to this predictivity, right?
Yes.
Can you explain that again? And also this then remark that because the anomalous dimension is so large for the graviton, minus 34.90, therefore, predictivity needs to be examined carefully. Can you comment more on that?
Yes. So this is more of a proposal of our proposal of a new criteria, so it is not a physically motivated criteria. So what we are saying is that we want a finite number of attractive direction at the fixed point. And to do that, we just require that there are a finite number of critical exponents at the fixed point. And if you consider, for example, an infinite number of operators that are powers of the graviton field, okay, you have to impose that the anomalous dimension has to be greater than some number, because the anomalous dimension of the field is a part of the leading order of the critical exponent of 6 points. So this explains a little bit better.
If you have almost 35, the anomalous dimension is almost 35, then that would mean that, or minus 35, that would mean that the dimensionality of this relevant surface is very high. That's what you're saying, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
and therefore predictivity in that sense is lower because
like a model with a lot of parameters that need to be fixed to be predictive.
Thank you.
Is there any other question? If not, let's thank the speaker again.